and welcome to another episode of the William Branham Historical Research Podcast. I'm your host, John Collins, the author and founder of William Branham Historical Research at william-branham.org. And with me, I have Steve Montgomery, the author of The Converging Apostasy and A Quick Outline of Hands-on Eschatology, A Matter of Timing and Agency. And together, we're examining the themes of apostasy in the New Apostolic Reformation and its history. Steve, it's good to be back and go through the the sacred purge. And this is something that I'm specifically interested in because, as you know, I've been working on my manuscript on the Christian identity to the New Apostolic Reformation, that history trail. And I'm getting into the themes of the sacred purge because, as you have already discussed, the sacred purge is deeply embedded to Christian identity, and they used that to weaponize a pseudo-religious purge of people of color in the United States. And so I'm really interested to get into this one because, you know, to the audience, it's not just you that are learning from Steve. As we talk, I'm picking up things too.
Yeah, John, good to be back as always. I hope you don't mind, but previous to getting started on this, we're having to talk about comparing notes to the work that dentists have done on her mouse. And yeah, it's kind of like pulling teeth when you get into this sacred purge thing, because it is painful but necessary. So for today, I was thinking about the idea of dehumanizing language that's used to set up the sacred purge. And so, for example, Jane Lead, 17th century prophet, who influenced the prophets of the Latter Rain movement in a very significant way. And then a big step sideways to the, I guess you'd call them their spiritual cousins in the esoteric world. That would be Helena Blavatsky in the 1880s, extremely influential to esoteric New Age thought. And in a way, even more influential is one of her disciples, Alice Bailey. So the teachings of Alice Bailey, people have rightly shown, kind of run parallel to a lot of the eschatology and the ideas of humans becoming somewhat like divine creatures, an overemphasis on angels and their interactions with people. This could all be found in Alice Bailey's writings, so it runs parallel with the Manifest Sons of God type teachings, which I've noticed some people are kind of getting aware of that, which is super. Another thing I was going to mention right out from the start here is that the confusion over the books that some people have been noticing trying to get in them on Amazon, that's been cleared up. So smooth sailing, knock on wood and all that stuff. Something happened last night. It's like this NAR thing just popped. It's like whack-a-mole. It keeps popping up everywhere in unexpected places. I happened to be watching one of the late-night interview comedy-type programs last night, and lo and behold, the host mentions Dutch Sheets, who's one of the NAR prophets. Now, he was making all kinds of fun with his name and, you know, taunting and teasing with that. But his real point was to bring up the idea of the pine tree flags that were present at the January 6th insurrection, and the fact that these flags are indicating support of the Stop the Steal ideas. They're also present at the Supreme Court Justice's Justice Alito's house. So it's kind of thought-provoking, to say the least. So when I talk about dehumanizing language, I would say like this, kind of like euphemisms. Terms like cleanse the earth, release the earth of all sin, eradicate the problems they were facing. Those kind of phrases and terms are used for what is essentially murder, kill, and assassinate. So it kind of comes with a different ring to it. It's kind of like thinking oh, this thing is $9.99. Well, it's technically more than $10. Just another way to put it into words, more acceptable. And it's interesting that dehumanizing loaded language, it really makes life cheapened, even if events of violence are carried out or not. And so whether or not the wording used is meant to be positive, negative, or neutral, it still has a way of taking a simple fact of, you know, the presence of a human being and putting their existence into language other than just saying, this is John Collins, this is Steve Montgomery. You have these reworded euphemistic comments that can either be positive, negative, or neutral. And this is, to say the least, but in current day America, it's very easy to find ample evidence of exclusionary us and them dehumanizing language.
And it's very dangerous. I know, you know, I'm a big fan of watching fiction and fantasy, etc., but I also like some dramas, and I can't remember the name of the movie, but there was a humanitarian aid that went into one of the Islamic countries, and you know, they're showing the terrorist groups, the extremism, the stuff that makes Hollywood exciting, but then the humanitarian aid goes into a small village and they see school children that are being raised where they're, the themes in their schools are targeting other people who aren't of their mindset. And so they basically grow up with these dehumanizing effects. And what happens is it breeds terrorists. That was the theme of the movie. And it's not just a Hollywood fiction. That's actually going on in certain cases. That's why you have extremists. And for that reason, I think you've probably seen, I think you might have been the one that shared it with me, but there are groups who have labeled the NAR as the Christian Taliban. And I said that in one of my podcasts recently, and I got a lot of backlash, like, you can't compare those two, but you really can. Whenever they're dehumanizing the people, they're setting up the framework to create terrorism. Because as soon as some child grows up under this theme, they're going to think like this, and there are bad actors in the world. I'll just say it like that. But I grew up with, interestingly, the dehumanization that was going on in the 50s and 60s, because I grew up on these recordings of William Branham from Latter Rain. And so I'm hypersensitive to it, because once you escape that and you recognize that that language was what the domestic terrorists were doing in the 50s and 60s. That's what I grew up with in my head. And it's so out of place. Like, it didn't have context to me until I started to, you know, examine what this was. And then I recognized it was the same thing, but it was done in the 50s and 60s. Now I take a step back and I look at the NAR. They are literally cloning the dehumanization language, the whole strategy, and they're doing it from what happened in Latter Rain, but it's very similar to these terroristic organizations overseas, and this is a very, very serious thing.
You are really hitting the nail on the head, John. Matter of fact, when you're speaking, I had to jot down a couple of things. Speaking of the 50s and 60s, one of the you know, seminal writings about brainwashing was done by Robert J. Lifton, about totalism and indoctrination techniques. And so he was using the model of prisoners of war in communist China and what techniques were used to break them down and rebuild them as communists, essentially. So what he had to say about that really, really fits what we're talking about in the dehumanizing language. He had a phrase for it. I think he had something like 6 or 7 points at which brainwashing and dehumanization happen. He would have called this dispensing of existence, as if you don't exist. You're not good. You're not one of us. So you're not even human. So, yeah, that was a big deal with him. If anybody wants to check out his writings, they're very, very enlightening. Okay, so yeah, so if we get to this kind of language with Jane Lead specifically, and of course you got to remember several key prophets of the Latter Rain essentially plagiarized her writings and got their eschatology from her and from the precedents she set. So here's some of the language that she used. It can be negative, it can be positive, but it kind of takes human beings away from just humans. So she said that the elite, I'm not quoting her with the word elite, but that's essentially what they are. The elite are, quote, qualified souls, conquerors, children of the divine mysteries, magical children, a select number, the seed of God, and the anointed ones. So even with the Nar and Light of Rain, you can hear some of that same kind of language towards conquerors and the anointed ones and so on. Here's something that gets a little bit more dangerous and sets precedence for some issues that can lead to the sacred purge. Jane Lead would refer to your physical body as a mortal form, a chosen vessel, a prepared vessel, a bodily vehicle. And right there, she sounds really identical to Alice Bailey, who, of course, was writing a couple of hundred years later in the esoteric world. And so Lead also refers to bodies as corporalities. Interesting phrase, but she calls them our essential heavens, as if all the divine reaching out into the universe and gathering powers are brought into our heavens, not heaven where God or Christ is located. And she also referred to mortal bodies as walls, as something that can be penetrated. And she actually uses that word penetrated for the spiritual realm, which she associated with the great cloud of witnesses. She also called them spirits of light, which is sounding quite esoteric, almost like Aleister Crowley kind of talk. But she says that the spiritual realm can penetrate into our essential heavens and break away the walls, therefore being, quote, incorporated with the elite on Earth.
And one thing a lot of researchers miss is the fact that this is loaded language, pure, plain, and simple. In fact, another good resource, you can read Dr. Stephen Hassan's Combating Cult Mind Control. He has an entire chapter, or a few, that actually go through that. But what researchers miss is this. When you're indoctrinated in this framework, those keywords that they use, like the chosen ones, in the message sect and its splinter groups, they called it the elect, or the elect seed, because of the two seed theology. Whenever your mind is manipulated into the mindset that has that loaded language, there's also the opposite. So while you're thinking elect, that means there must also be a non-elect. So while you're an elect Christian, that means that there must be a non-elect Christian. In other words, you're better than they are. So it's very, very easy to miss if you weren't raised in this weird nonsense, but it is literally a strategy to pit you against other people. And many of those other people may also be Christian.
That is very well said, John. Again, I'm jotting down notes. One is just a kind of a flippant little note here. Is my wife and I came across a spoof of a Chinese karate fighting type movies. It's called Kung Pao. And the leading character is, he's really wacky, but he's the chosen. And he has this odd thing that indicates he's the chosen. When he sticks out his tongue has a tongue which speaks. So it's really wacky. That's fascinating what you're talking about there, John.
One of my favorites is Zato Ichi, the blind samurai. I don't know if you've seen this, but this blind man with a sword, he'll go into a bar in Japan, and then suddenly everybody's, you know, they're all purged out of the bar. But it's amazing when you think of, you know, that is science fiction, and I'm entertained by it. But when you think these Christian ministers are trying to paint those similar scenes in your head and then tell you that in the future you're going to play out some of this stuff, that's really scary.
So here's some examples of dehumanizing language from the theosophist, and literally she was a Satanist, Helena Blavatsky. This was written around 1888. when she had her, quote, The Secret Doctrine published. So here's what she has to say. And this language, again, it lines up with what John and I are saying about the dehumanizing language, the us and the them. If we are the us and they are the them, well, that even goes back to the language of somebody who influenced Blavatsky, and that is the second century Gnostic Valentinus. The way he put it was there would be, he had three sets of humans. It's very interesting because it kind of aligns with George Warnock's three feasts. And so Valentinus said that the elect would be totally infused by their personal angel, and this would make them sinless and very godlike. There's a middle group that are, kind of on the way. They might make it, but they're not really the us. They're in the middle. And then there's the no-go, no-show, and they will be, I've got this from several scholars. I'm not interpreting what he said, but scholars will say that the lowest rank will be eliminated, destroyed, words like that, at the eschaton, meaning the end of time. So, yeah, we have something from Valentinus, which comes up all the way to Blavatsky and then in different forms through the latter reign of the Gnar. So here's what Blavatsky had to say. Reincarnation is natural selection's way of cherry-picking who stays and who goes. The key would be that natural selection part. It is therefore no surprise that, quote, less favored failures of nature will vanish from the human family. Yikes. She also has this to say. That's because, quote, no amount of training can raise such human specimens to the same intellectual level as the Aryans. Yes, she was one of those kind of folks. This is because the highest people now on Earth are the Aryan white conquerors. So if anybody has any doubts whether the alt-right, Christian identity, white supremacist groups are sometimes very, very well aware of Blavatsky, they're essentially saying similar things. And of course, she was totally esoteric, but that's also why you have people like Wesley Swift, who's just like a sponge soaking up stuff from Manifest Sons of God lettering and from esoteric sources of inspiration. And she also has this to say, which is, again, quite alarming, in that this was pre-Nazi Germany, but a lot of her writings, a lot of little societies cropped up in Germany prior to the war and during the war. This is what she says. Nothing is ever destroyed utterly or finally, since the death of a man means but the dissolution of his temporary instruments or vestures. So your body is this temporary instrument or vesture. And, well, if it gets, you know, taken out sometime, like somebody kills it, no big deal. We've got reincarnation to make you feel better. And also the fact that this is a temporary instrument.
You mentioned Valentinus. The Valentinians, I want to hone in on something a little bit further. They tied this belief of the three types of people to salvation. And it was tied directly because they were trying to make the leap between the human psyche and salvation, and because they were worshiping the Sophia, the goddess of wisdom. They wanted to associate the psyche with the wisdom. So if you were wise, you were a believer, you were saved. If you were on the fence, then you might be, but we really can't say what you are, and therefore you're a lesser being. And then those who did not believe in your way, that was the cast out. Well, in Latter Rain, it was the same exact framework. They would say there are three types of believers, a believer, a make-believer, and an unbeliever. And what they were talking about was the Sophia of the Latter Rain. You believed in this faith healing thing that they were selling you. And if you believed that, you had the secret knowledge, you had the Sophia. So that entire framework went through Latter Rain. And we see in the NAR, they're just simply carrying the same exact thing forward.
Yeah, and one of the reasons they folks will really hone in on the influence of George Warner's The Feast of Tabernacles. I mean, you know, if you go to folks like John Robert Stevens, he pretty much credits his introduction to Latter Rain doctrine to that writing of George Warner. But yeah, it also has a parallel not only with Valentinus, but in Alice Bailey's set of initiations, and she's got a whole bunch. It's too complicated to describe them all. But essentially, the third initiation, in her wording, brings on divinity, where you're in tune with the world's soul, and you have a higher connection with your psychic and innate psychic abilities and so on. So yeah, it kind of runs parallel with the Latter Rain Manifest Sons of God stuff that was inspired largely due to and that brings up something. I can stop myself in mid stride there. Bill Mackenstedt found out through personal interviews that George Warnock completely thought that Jane Lead's prophecies were, quote, of God, because Warnock really doesn't mention that in his writings. Bill Britton does. J. Preston Eby does. George Houghton does, the leader of the Latter Rain at that time. And also Roel Cronquist, who, interestingly, was John Robert Stevens' right-hand man, and he kind of broke with John, I think, essentially over money issues, which, you know, again, it just shows the priorities where these guys' heads are at. But yeah, moving right into Blavatsky, she started the Theosophical Society and was basically a Satanist. It's interesting to see something, a lot of people downplay this, and you get kind of a mixed bag of information. They'll say Blavatsky, oh no, she was totally into the spiritual realm, had no influence or interest in politics, the quote, taking dominion aspect of all this kind of business we're talking about. But although she claimed she didn't, the aftermath was political, and it really follows what you were saying, John, of the us and them. Because Blavatsky had the idea and promoted this idea of we are it, we are the ones who have this higher form of knowledge, then yeah, there was an us and a them. So if anybody was related to that concept and happened to be politically involved, then ideas like the sacred purge or taking dominion, of course, Blavatsky doesn't use those words, but same concepts, they come into play. So I have here is a little title for this next part. Blavatsky's influence helped to create India's current day Hindu nationalism. So we talk about Christian nationalism and some of the dangers of that here in the United States. Well, India is currently going through that kind of stuff. So I found this article called Theosophy as a Political Movement. Again, not what a lot of people register as Theosophy as having that connection. So in the article, it says that Blavatsky provided Indian nationalists with an ideology of a paradise free from the spiritual and social problems of modernity. That sounds to me very much like the esoteric fascist and advisor to Vladimir Putin, whose name is Alexander Dugin. Okay, Dugin influenced a lot of the alt-right people. Steve Bannon has referenced him. So he's really got some dark stuff up his sleeve, but he's got the same concept of we're doing away with modernity and moving into this paradise, this lost golden age. So the author of this article also says the golden age had come to an end as a result of disruptive effects of foreign rule. So now Indians need to revive their culture, purging it, and therefore liberating themselves. Interesting language. So here's another angle to that from a different author. And this article is called How Hindu Supremacists Are Tearing India Apart. Now, we're not talking about too long ago. This was written in 2020. And in this article, it says, because of Blavatsky's influence, Indian politics is being constructed entirely around the premise of exclusion, of deciding who can and who can't be a true Indian.
What's really interesting when you think about this in terms of the United States, I have friends who are in what I would consider Christian nationalism, and oddly, they wouldn't consider themselves in that. But those very same people would see the, you know, the Hindu nationalist or Islamic nationalist, any of the other countries, they would see the dangers in it, and they're very open to point this out, right? Not realizing that they're doing the exact same things, but that's because of the manipulation and the religious aspects of this. They're manipulated to think that it is good, it is Christian, to be a Christian nationalist and to, you know, break down the barriers that separate church and state because of dominionism. We as Christians, according to that philosophy, we need to take dominion over those who aren't Christian and even some who are Christian who don't agree with our worldview. And that's the whole framework for this. And the irony is just, it blows your mind when you think about it, but having escaped a mind control cult, then you start to see the aspects of mind control in all of this, because they don't even see that they're doing this thing. That, for me, is another thing that's really scary about this. Have you ever wondered how the Pentecostal movement started, or how the progression of modern Pentecostalism transitioned through the Latter Rain, Charismatic, and other fringe movements into the New Apostolic Reformation? You can learn this and more on William Branham Historical Research's website, william-branham.org. On the books page of the website, you can find the compiled research of John Collins, Charles Paisley, Stephen Montgomery, John McKinnon, and others, with links to the paper, audio, and digital versions of each book. You can also find resources and documentation on various people and topics related to those movements. If you want to contribute to the cause, you can support the podcast by clicking the Contribute button at the top. And as always, be sure to like and subscribe to the audio or video version that you're listening to or watching. On behalf of William Branham Historical Research, we want to thank you for your support.
Yeah, and that idea of manipulation, what comes to my mind when you mentioned that, John, is the idea of repackaging. Why don't people recognize it's there in the same thing? Is there's a new iteration of the same doctrine. So people nowadays, you know, in the narrative say, oh, no, we have nothing to do with the Latter Rain. That was very controversial stuff. Manifest Sons of God? No, we don't teach that. But what happens is the terminology is changed, euphemized sometimes. So to me, what I look at it is, an easy example of that would be, quote, taking dominion. NAR folks nowadays try to talk about either the seven mountains or just influencing society, but the way they do it gets the same result. So here's some more about this Blavatsky-influenced Indian nationalism. So, Narendra Modi is the prime minister of India's right-wing government. So he's a very influential man in India, obviously. One of Modi's officials called Bangladeshi immigrants, quote, termites, who should be picked up one by one and thrown into the Bay of Bengal to drown. I think we've heard terms like that directed towards immigrants here in the United States. No need to mention where those terms are coming from. But yeah, termites is not a good term. It's not a good term for a human being. And so these extremists that feel this way about immigration, and they're essentially radical folks in India today, they're called Hindutva extremists. This is scary those folks who have these concepts like, let's deal with these termites, they have, according to this author, at least 4 million volunteers who swear oaths of allegiance and take part in quasi-military drills. Sounds kind of like the militia guys associated with alt-right and Christian Identity today. So here's another article that I found. It's called Alternative Histories. Is that like alternative facts? Yeah, probably. Alternative Histories, Observing Theosophical Truths in Hindu Nationalisms. So it gives us this insight. It says that through Blavatsky's influence, India's restoration of identity includes the concept of Aryan ancestry, which became a tool of right-wing nationalism. Well, there's a lot to unpack there, and so many parallels to what we see happening in the United States, not only with Christian Identity, but obviously with the NAR. Indians, therefore, have a clear choice. Okay, there's that us and them, you're either right or you're wrong. They can either swear allegiance to the Hindutvas, or they can retain their beliefs, thereby making themselves fit for destruction. Now, if you're talking about euphemisms or toned down loaded language, destruction doesn't mean they will have their heads chopped off or they will be shot. I mean, it could mean that, but it doesn't state that. But that's where folks that are really interested in implementing this so-called sacred purge have a way of taking words like that and defining them more explicitly and more dangerously. There's a name here I think you've run into, John, that really influenced a lot of the Christian Identity folks. So it's pretty much no surprise that the Hindutva ideas were supported by the Blavatsky-inspired esoteric fascist and Hitler enthusiast Savitri Devi, who is praised by the alt-right and by Christian Identity advocates.
I think it's in our Weaponized Religion series on the podcast, we actually talk about how British Israelism made its way into India. And you see all of the fruits of what has developed from this. And the irony is, it's just astounding, because when you think of what developed in the United States and how that went into the race wars of the 60s, well, when you picture that happening in other countries too, under the same foundation, it blows your mind, you know, especially people in India have dark skin. But that just goes to prove it's not so much about the skin color. This is a means to manipulate people into an ideology that puts them against other humans. And the whole framework of this is just, it's really scary stuff. It's awful. But you're mentioning the Nazis. That's another thing that just boggles your mind when you think of what Hitler did and you think of how he weaponized some of the themes that we're talking about in this podcast and in the Weaponized podcast. The Nazis were using the same exact framework to create genocide for the Jews. Well, imagine that's coming through the latter rain, some of those same exact themes. Now, they didn't create a genocide, they didn't purge people, but they planted the notion in somebody's head that there is an us and there is a them and we're better than them. This could have actually developed to that had certain people in the Latter Rain movement not died.
Yeah, one of the guys that really comes to mind there, actually a couple of guys, the chief apostle of the Latter Rain, George Houghton, who I had correspondence with him. We talked on the phone some time. He was getting pretty old by the time I got a hold of him. And then we corresponded by letters, no emails in those days. He says things that really, really lend themselves to British Israelism. And also, if you go to Roel Cronquist and to J. Preston Eby, who were very, very much influenced by Jane Lead, they say things, we might have mentioned this before, John, but they talk about pre-Adamic man and that the teachings of the manifest sons of God and the sonship message, so-called, support this idea. And Tyche Crisp, is another one who actually is one of those who he has New Age thought and sonship, latter rain thought running side by side, and he's aware of it. And he talks about George Haught and Bill Britton as being these great men of God. And he also talks about that many people in a sonship message are advocating something along the lines of pre-Adamic man was kind of a lower form, a specimen of humanity, as Blavatsky would have said. And then you've got the us, which is those who will be Christed, become manifest as the sons of God. So we can take this to the next level, which is more recent. And this is dehumanizing language from the New Age author and Luciferian. And yes, it's very clear in her writings. She thinks Lucifer's the dude and Jesus is kind of secondary. And that would be Alice Bailey. So a couple of things, disclaimers about that is, some people feel that if you use the word New Age, you're kind of like a conspiracy theorist. Well, Alice Bailey used that word quite a bit, and she was the one that said we must work for the New Age and the reappearance of the Christ. And she literally said world government, theocracy, and so on. So it's kind of enlightening to think that her writings came between 1919 and 1949. And she was, like Blavatsky, an anti-Semite. So you can see that the esoteric world is again supporting concepts, which you can trace all the way back to Valentinus, that would lead to not only an us and them, but would define them as non-believers, but also specifically as Jews. So here's some of her dehumanizing loaded language. She says that our bodies are human mechanisms, bodily forms, and vehicles of expression. One of my wife's least favorite Beatles songs is Baby, You Can Drive My Car. So it looks like a vehicle of expression. Is that all I am? I mean, if so, then my wife is probably going to have to talk to me about changing that. So, and this is something that Bailey's trying to take on this, a different form of language to make her sound high and mighty. You'll recognize the terminology here, John. She says, how oft have I told you that all is energy, and there is naught else? Okay, so if all is energy, and you're just a bodily form, you can kind of put two and two together, and you'll see that she does shortly here. But this is what happens when people do research and they only get that much. They'll say, that could be bad, but wait, if you keep on reading, Bailey will fill in the gaps and make those vague terms more explicit. She says, or I'll show you where the quote is, therefore, those who resist the establishment of the New Age will be, quote, occultly withdrawn, a.k.a. abstracted. So, John, I know we're talking about dentist issues, but I don't know if you've ever had a tooth abstracted, but it sounds painful. And so here's another one she says. They will have their vibration stepped up to better things, even if their physical vehicles are destroyed in the process. That's a direct quote. Okay, it's sounding more and more ugly as we go here. This is because occult law is destructive as well as constructive. Not to go deeply into it, but that's straight up Bill Britton latter rain talk. The day of the Lord is destructive and constructive. That would be the way Bill Britton would put that one. Bailey says, so another surgical operation, one other than World War II, may be necessary. That sounds pretty ominous to me. And so she says, when a physical form proves inadequate, it is no disaster when that form has to go. Well, I would be worried about who's deciding when and if it has to go. at the appointed time, the soul will know that it's time to withdraw from their bodily form. That's because the service of the form will no longer be required, so it must be discarded. Well, if you've read any more current, this is, like I said, up to about 1949. If you've read any more current New Age writings, they do talk about this need for Mother Earth to have a cleansing operation that will allow bodies that have kind of served their purpose to be withdrawn. Now, Bailey actually says that Christianity's failure is their connection to Judaism and Jehovah. So it sounds like we're kind of in the target of those who must be discarded. According to the fulfillment, this is pretty odd from Bailey, according to the fulfillment of the ancient prophecy, she doesn't say what it is, there has been an attempt to destroy the Aryan race. I've heard Wesley Swift say that, and so all I have to say to that is, say what? An attempt to destroy the Aryan race? What the heck is he talking about? And so my only thought here is, can it get any worse than this?
I'm trying to picture somebody who has never experienced any of this listening to the things that we've just said. I can't believe that we're hearing vibrations and angels and purges in a Christian conversation. But to those of us who were raised in this, this all sounds spiritual. It sounds Christian because they manipulated our heads to think that we need to look for angels and demons and we need to look for vibrations. And they had like, you've seen the video, the vibrating hand. This is how I know that you have this disease. Or one of the tricks I recently was talking about was before the vibrating hand, I don't know if you knew this, but there was the purple hand. And what they did, the faith healers would put a rock under their underarm, and they would squeeze real tight so it cuts off the circulation and flow, and their hand would turn purple. And they say, look, I have a purple hand, so therefore I can heal you. And you know, all of this stuff has nothing to do with Christianity, but we're manipulated into thinking that it does, and we're looking for these. I mean, these, it goes beyond esotericism. These are demonic things that we're talking about, but they have taken the very demonic forces of the ancient world, and they're trying to package it together with Christianity, where it sounds like a new thing. It's a new wisdom. It's a new Sophia, and only the elect have it. You have to be of that mindset, and then by default, the non-elect do not have it. They don't understand our angels and demons and vibrations and weird stuff. And therefore, we're going to be the ones to purge them from the earth.
Yeah, so true. And so to answer my rhetorical question, I'd say, yes, it does get worse. Hard to believe. But Bailey's two most seminal works really began right as the latter rain was beginning. So, hey, I haven't made direct connections between that, but it's kind of ironic, kind of interesting. One was The Externalization of the Hierarchy, 1948. That one, externalization is essentially saying there's a spiritual hierarchy, and in the Bible, they might, it'd be referenced to powers and principalities. The Apostle Paul is writing about essentially, as you said, demonic forces. So what Bailey's talking about is similar to Crowley, is a portal is to be opened, and these beings are going to come down. And as Ruth Montgomery, thankfully no relation, Ruth Montgomery was a disciple of Bailey. She said that there would be, quote, walk-ins. Those are people who turn over their bodies to these folks from the hierarchy, these highly evolved beings, and then they will help to inaugurate the new age. And so Bailey's in this 1948 work, and also she had another one, The Reappearance of the Christ, that was 1947. I have heard Wesley Swift in a message, he calls it, I think it's something about do the Gnostic gospel support the message of identity. Well, they're pretty similar. So Bailey has this to say. I know I'm putting a lot of parenthetical thoughts into this, But Bailey says something here that the Jane influenced J. Preston Eby also says is quite disturbing. She says that there were great and outstanding personalities. Okay. What do you mean? Like Einstein, Frederick Douglass, maybe George Washington. You know, those would be outstanding personalities. Now, her list is a bit different. She includes the great men who inspired the French Revolution. So, John, you like history. You ever read about Robespierre and his guillotines? He kept those guillotines quite busy. Okay, the second person she mentioned is Mussolini, the regenerator of his people. Wow. Third person, Hitler, who lifted a distressed people upon his shoulders. That is pretty bizarre. Four, Lenin, the idealist. And five, the dictators, Stalin and Franco. She says that all of these men were expressions. That even is not personal. She's calling them an expression. They're expressions of certain little understood energies. That sounds kind of complimentary. They're highly developed personalities, agents of destiny, and destroyers of what must be destroyed. And so, likewise, those who are not sufficiently developed in their spiritual journey, and this is where you were talking about, John, the us and them, those who are not sufficiently developed will be sent to their next life in a global cleansing action.
And there you have a trail of really bad people. And again, how is this related to the NAR? How is it related to Christianity? Well, in the Latter Rain movement, many of those same people were in the same trails. There were, I grew up listening to sermons. I don't know if I've told you this or not before. You may have heard it, but I grew up listening to sermons where, you know, the painting of Jesus knocking at the heart's door, that it's in several Christian homes. Well, I grew up with sermons talking about when Hitler knocks at the door, how special that would be. That was in Latter Rain. That's something that they literally, there were sermons talking about how wonderful it would be if Hitler knocked at our door. We would just raise up to go greet him. It would be so wonderful. And, you know, because you're so manipulated, I knew Hitler was a bad guy, but you're so manipulated, you're like, oh, wow, that is such a great sermon about Hitler knocking at the heart's door. But what this thing has done, it has taken very, very bad people and bad ideologies, but it's built upon those bad ideologies and called it Christianity. And so there are elements from what Hitler did to bring the people under mind control that they have to use in these cults, because that's how you manipulate people. And Hitler showed that you can manipulate an entire country of people. So let's use his ideas, and they'll take his ideas and they'll run with them, and they'll pick from all of these other people. Well, New Age people are doing it. Spiritualists are doing it. Interestingly, that we have Christians today who are doing it. They're doing the same thing. And it has no place in the world, let alone in Christianity.
Yeah, and that's pretty much fitting what I have the title of my book, Conversion. The conversion apostasy is the lines between those who have these seminal foundational New Age writings like Blavatsky and Bailey and Ruth Montgomery. Those folks, their ideas are becoming closer and closer. So I would say if anybody's interested in that, they could check out the CRISP, C-R-I-S-P, their Good Seeds publications, because they go into this kind of stuff for quite a bit and connect. They notice the similarities between New Age and Latter Rain-ish kind of ideas. So I just have to say this, that Alice Bailey likes to talk about death a lot. So here's a few quotes, and this will fill out the gap between those instances of dehumanizing language, and what do you do about that? Where does that go? Well, an example, you can find that, again, with the Hitler connection, totally into the Latter-day Manifest Sons of God doctrines and into George Warnock's The Feast of Tabernacles, that would be John Robert Stevens. There's a really excellent documentary of him, and if any of the viewers would like to see, it's called Vain Glory. And that's about John Robert Stevens' cult called The Walk. And I talked to one of the authors of that script, one of the guys, producers who put that together. And he told me very plainly that there were elders in John Robert Stevens' group, his Latter-day group, that said they were going to collect guns to finish the job that that Hitler started. And actually, the person I mentioned earlier, Savitri, she her pro-Hitler thoughts run really deep. So that's something you could probably even Google that and get it off of Wikipedia. But here's some final thoughts, John, about Alice Bailey's terminology, how she treats words and loads language. She says, death is not a disaster to be feared, since the work of the destroyer is not really cruel or undesirable. This means that certain methods of release and modes of abstraction, such as soul withdrawal and the process of a liberation and release, will be applied to death and dying. That is just loaded to the brim with everything other than saying assassinate, kill, murder. But it's all there if you put it into context of your other ideas. As a matter of fact, there is no death, only freedom from the handicaps of the fleshly vehicle. Interesting. So the problem of accepting euthanasia will not exist when continuity of consciousness negates death. There is no death. So, hey, if we decide you need to be euthanized because you're no longer of any use to the New Age or the Kingdom of God, then we can euthanize you, and then you'll be gone. It won't be a problem. And she actually referred to the problem as germs on that are infecting Mother Earth that must be cured and eliminated. Okay, so she says, after all, the worst death of all is if the old order never alters. Therefore, death can be easily grasped by the esotericists as the birth pangs of the new order. How does this new order compare, this is me speaking, how does it compare with the kingdom to be ushered in by the prophets of the Nar?
It's just so messed up. It's like if you took the George Orwell's book, 1984, and then used that as a framework for creating a religion. That's how it compares to the NAR. These groups have they've taken something that is such a wrong idea, not even by just simply Christian standards, but by human standards. This is wrong. This is not the way to be, especially for Christians. But they've taken the things that the whole world, even atheists, know that this is wrong, but they're packaging it as Christianity. And the fact that they can manipulate minds into thinking that this thing that they have gotten from these very, very bad sources is actually of God just boggles your mind.
Yeah, and the thing about Alice Bailey, I mean, there's several labels you can give her, like a New Age author, whatever. She referred to herself as a Christian esotericist. And there's really not much different in what she means by esotericist and what Latter-day Manifest Sons of God NAR folks would call prophet. Or I think it's interesting, John, you may have seen this term, seer, S-E-E-R.
Oh, yeah.
We've got seers. The prophets are actually seers. That sounds like something from the pagan world just to my ears.
Yeah, one of the eye-opening things for me after I left this type of movement, and I started just simply reading the Bible cover to cover over and over again. I did it like 10 to 15 times. Biggest most interesting thing for me is the perception of what they called a seer or a prophet, because they want you to think it's more like a fortune teller. This is a guy who can predict futures. That is what they call a prophet. It is a guy who is predicting a future. But if you go back and you look at the Old Testament prophets, there was the Mosaic Law, and in the law, there were provisions for blessings and provisions for curses. And then if you follow the trail through the book of Kings, you're going to find that a good king rose into power and he fell into idolatry, and therefore the curse was coming. And so it wasn't so much that they were predicting a future, it was that they were telling why there was a consequence. And sometimes there would be a blessing that would come, and here is the reason for your blessing. So it's not that it was this crystal ball person that you could go to and you could say, hey, I want to know who is the next president, like these NAR prophets are doing. This was literally a voice speaking to God about something that you did to either correct you and turn you to the right path, or to give you a blessing because you were going on the right path. And realizing that for me made me understand that this whole movement wasn't Christianity. But anyway, there's so much more we could do, Steve. We've got to cut it off, and we'll get back together next time and go through it. So if you've enjoyed our show and you want more information, you can check us out on the web. You can find us at william-branham.org. For more information about the dark side of Latter Rain, read Weaponized Religion, From Latter Rain to Colonia Dignidad, available on Amazon, Kindle, and Audible. For more about the Converging Apostasy, you can read the book called The Converging Apostasy. And you can also read the book, A Quick Outline of Hands-on Eschatology, A Matter of Timing and Agency.